Spiritual Combat and Devices of the Devil. Chapter 11. Of the pains the devil takes to disturb this peace, and how we should guard ourselves from his devices. As it is our adversary's custom to seek to devour souls, he uses all his efforts to lead them away from humility and simplicity, and to make them attribute something to themselves and their own industry, irrespective of the gift of grace, without which no man can name the name of Jesus. And though of ourselves and with our own free will we may resist this grace, yet without it we have no power to accept it. So that if any man receive it not, it is by his own fault. But if he receive it, he does not and cannot do so without that same grace, which is nevertheless sufficiently offered to all. Our enemy, then, endeavors to make us think and believe that it is of ourselves that we are more diligent than others and better disposed to receive the gifts of God, and so to lead us to pride and to forget our own insufficiency if unaided, that thence we may be led on to despise others in our heart who do not the same good works that we do. Therefore, unless thou be very watchful and return instantly and with all speed, as thou hast been told, to humble, abase, and annihilate thyself, he will cause thee to fall into pride, like that of the Pharisee in the gospel, who boasted of his own good works, and judged evil of others. And by this means, if he ever succeeds in obtaining possession of thy will, he will make himself master of it, and fill it with all manner of wickedness, to thy great injury and danger. Therefore does the Lord warn us to watch and pray. Thou must stand, then, most carefully on thy guard, lest the enemy rob thee of so great a treasure as quietness and peace of mind. For he tries with all his might to rob thee of this repose, and to keep thy soul in continual anxiety and disturbance, knowing that this is its very ruin and perdition. For if a soul be at peace, it does everything with ease, it does great things and all things well. Hence it perseveres willingly and easily resists all opposition. And on the contrary, if it be disturbed and disquieted, it does little, and that very imperfectly, is soon wearied, and in short, lives in a fruitless martyrdom. Wouldst thou then come off victorious and suffer not the enemy to spoil thy labor, there is no one point to be more jealously watched than this, not to suffer disquiet to enter thy soul, nor to yield it even a momentary consent. And to learn the better how to guard thyself against the wiles of Satan, take it in this case for a certain rule that every thought which discourages and hinders thee from increasing in love and confidence towards God is a messenger of hell, and that as such thou must drive it away, and neither admit it nor give it a hearing. For the office of the Holy Spirit is none other than always and on all occasions to unite the soul more and more closely to God, enkindling and inflaming it with his sweet love, and inspiring it with fresh confidence. Whilst that of the devil is just the contrary, using to this end all the means in his power, such as infusing excessive fear, aggravating our ordinary weakness, suggesting that we do not prepare ourselves as we ought to do, either for confession, communion, or prayer, and so rendering us always disheartened, fearful, and disquieted. The want of sensible devotion and of consolation in prayer and other exercises, he makes an occasion of impatient sadness, giving the soul to understand that all is thus lost, and that it were better to leave off so many exercises. And he brings us at last into such great distrust and anxiety as to make us think that, do what we will, all is vain and fruitless. And so our grief and fear go on increasing, till we think ourselves forgotten by God. But it is not so indeed, for innumerable are the benefits which would flow from aridity and want of sensible devotions, if only we understood what God would thereby work in us, asking only on our part patience and perseverance in well-doing to the best of our power. And that thou mayest understand this the better, and that the blessing and the benefit which God wills to bestow upon thee may not, from thy want of understanding, turn to thine injury, I will briefly state in this place the advantages of humble perseverance in these dry exercises, that thus instructed, thou lose not peace of mind when thou art afflicted by this aridity of spirit and oppression of heart, because of the want of feeling and consolation in devotion or any other temptation, however horrible it may be. Chapter 12. That the soul must not disquiet itself on account of interior temptations. Many are the blessings which spiritual bitterness and aridity confer upon the soul, if only it be received with humility and patience. Did man but understand this, he would doubtless feel less disquiet and grief when overtaken thereby, because he would look upon it not as a sign of his Lord's hatred, but of his great and special love, and he would receive it as a special favor vouchsafed to him. This is very evident if we consider that such things befall those only who desire to devote themselves unreservedly to the service of God, and to avoid all things which may offend him. And it seldom happens at the beginning of their conversion, but after they've served the Lord for some time, and are minded to resolve to serve him more perfectly, and have already set their hand to the work. We never find that sinners or persons given up to worldly things complain of such temptations, whence it plainly appears that this is a precious food wherewith God nourishes those whom he loves. And though it be insipid to our taste, it nevertheless strengthens us marvelously, though we perceive it not. Because the soul, finding itself in such a state of aridity, and often moreover enduring temptations, the very thought of which fills her with horror, is by this means led to that fear and detestation of self, and that humility which God desires to behold in her, although, as we've said, she, not as yet understanding this secret, abhors such a path, and shrinks from walking in it, being unwilling to be ever left without consolation and joy, and esteeming all other exercises without them to be but lost time and fruitless labor. Chapter 13. That temptations are sent us by God for our good. To understand, then, more particularly how it is that temptations are sent us by God for our good, we must consider that because of the evil inclination of this corrupt nature, man is proud and lofty in his conceit, always thinking more highly of himself than he ought to think. This self-esteem is so dangerous to true spiritual progress that the very shadow of it is a sufficient hindrance in the path of true perfection. Therefore, our most faithful God, in his loving providence over each one of us, and especially over those who have given themselves up to his service, takes care to place us in a position where we may escape so great a danger, forcing us, as it were, to come to a true knowledge of ourselves. He did thus with the great apostle Saint Peter, suffering him to deny him, that he might learn to know and no longer to trust himself, and with the apostle Saint Paul, to whom, after he had caught him up in the third heaven and imparted to him divine secrets, he sent a troublesome temptation, in order that the knowledge of his own weakness might keep him humble, that he might learn to glory only in his infirmities, lest, as he himself says, the greatness of the revelations vouchsafed to him by God should lift him up into presumption. God, then, in compassion for our misery and perverse will, permits these temptations to come upon us in various and sometimes very dreadful forms, that we may learn to know and humble ourselves, though we discern not their use. And herein he shows forth his wisdom and goodness, because he benefits us most by means of those things which seem to us most injurious, for we are thereby led to humble ourselves the more, which is the thing which our soul needs above all things. For the servant of God who is troubled by thoughts like these, and by such indevotion and aridity of spirit, generally thinks that all this arises from his own imperfections, and that there cannot be another soul so sinful and so lukewarm in God's service as his. He believes that such thoughts come into the minds of those only who are forsaken by God, and that he deserves to be thus forsaken. Hence, he who once thought himself to be something comes by the use of this bitter medicine sent to him from heaven to account himself the vilest of men, and even unworthy of the name of Christian. Nor would he ever have come to so low an estimation of himself, nor to such deep humility, had not he been forced to it by great tribulation and these strange temptations. For one favor which God confers in this life upon the soul, which has wholly committed and resigned herself to his hands, is to medicine her as he pleases, and with such medicines as he alone perfectly knows to be necessary to her health and well-being. Our souls reap many other fruits besides this from such temptations and want of devotion. For he who is thus afflicted is almost compelled to have recourse to God and to try to do good works as a remedy for his distress, and in like manner, to free himself from such suffering, he sets about examining his conscience, avoiding all sin and everything which seems to be imperfect or which may in any way remove him from God. And so this affliction, which he took to be so adverse and hurtful, serves afterwards as a scourge to drive him to seek God with greater fervor, and to avoid everything which seems to be not conformable to the divine will. And lastly, all these tribulations and all the toil and labor which the soul endures under these temptations and want of spiritual joys, if borne, as we've said, with patience and humility, are but a loving purgatory, and serve to win for us that crown in heaven which by such means only can be obtained, and which shall be glorious in proportion to the greatness of those toils and labors. Hence we perceive how little reason we have to be discontented and disturbed on this account, as is the way with persons of small experience, who attribute to the devil or to their own sins and imperfections that which comes to them from the hand of God, who mistake tokens of love for indications of hatred, and think that these divine favors and caresses are strokes which come from an offended heart, who believe all they do to be lost and worthless, and that without remedy. Whereas, could they but believe the truth that this is no loss, but great gain, if, as they always may, they would but avail themselves of the opportunity, and see that all is a proof of God's loving remembrance of us, it would be impossible for them to disquiet themselves or lose their peace, because they are disturbed by many temptations and imaginations, and find themselves dry and indevout in prayer and other exercises. They would then, on the contrary, with renewed perseverance, humble their souls in the sight of the Lord, proposing in all and through all to accomplish the divine will in whatever way the Lord may will to make use of them in this world, using all diligence to keep themselves in peace and tranquility, accepting all things from their heavenly Father, in whose hand alone is the chalice which is given them to drink. For whether trouble and temptation come to thee from the devil, or from men, or on account of sin, or in any other way, still it is God who sends it, though he offers it to thee in various ways according to his good pleasure. For it is the evil of the trouble alone which reaches thee, and this is always from him who orders it for thy good. And although the evil of the fault committed, for instance, by thy neighbor in injuring or insulting thee, is contrary to his will, yet he makes use of it for thy benefit and healing. Instead, therefore, of giving way to grief and discontent, thou shouldst thank him with interior joy and gladness, doing all that thou canst with resolution and perseverance, not losing time, and with it the many and great benefits which God wills that thou shouldst gain by this opportunity which he offers thee. Chapter 14 of the Remedy Against Uneasiness Under Faults and Failures. If at any time thou shouldst fall into some sin or negligence in word or deed, such as disquieting thyself at anything which befalls thee, or murmuring, or listening to murmurs, or falling into disputation, or impatience, or curiosity, or suspicion of others, or into any other fault, either once or many times, disturb not thyself, neither be grieved nor disheartened at the thought of what has happened, nor be confounded within thyself, at one time thinking that thou wilt never be free from such frailties, at another that they have been caused by thine own imperfection and infirmity of purpose, or again representing to thyself that thou art not really walking in the Spirit and the way of the Lord, and with a thousand other fears burdening thy soul at every step with cowardice and discontent. Hence it follows that though thou art ashamed to appear before God, or thou approachest him distrustfully, as if thou hadst broken faith with him, and as a remedy thou losest time in thinking over these things, scrutinizing how far thou didst it deliberately, and whether thou hast consented or not, whether thou didst it willingly or not, or whether thou didst reject the thought. And because thou hast not taken the right road, the more thou thinkest of it, the less dost thou understand thyself, and the more dost thy perplexity and trouble increase, and thy anxiety to confess. And thou goest to confession with an uneasy fear. And after losing much time in making thy confession, thy spirit is but the more disquieted from the idea of not having told all. And so thou leadest a most bitter and anxious life with little fruit, and losing great part of its merit. And all this comes from not understanding thy natural weakness, and not knowing how the soul ought to treat with God. For after having fallen into all the above-named frailties, or into any other, she may more easily treat with him by a humble and loving conversion than by the grief and discontent she feels for the fault, dwelling on the examination of venial and ordinary sins, of which especially I'm speaking. For into such only does a soul commonly fall, which is living in the manner here supposed, and I speak only of those who are leading a spiritual life, and who are striving to advance therein, and are free from mortal sin. For those who live carelessly and in mortal sin, and are continually offending God, need another kind of exhortation, and this medicine is not for them. For such have great need to be disturbed and to weep, and to give much thought to self-examination and confession, lest, through their own fault and negligence, they lose the remedy needful for their salvation. To return then to the subject of that peace and quietness in which the servant of God should ever keep himself, I will say further that in order to be full of trust in God, this conversion must be understood with reference not only to light and daily faults, but to others greater and heavier than usual, if at any time the Lord should suffer thee to fall into such. Even though they may be many and repeated, and spring not from weakness and frailty only, but from deliberation. For the contrition which fills the troubled soul with nothing but scruples will never bring it to perfection, unless it be joined to a loving confidence in the goodness and mercy of God. And this is especially necessary for persons who desire not only to come forth from their miseries, but also wish to attain to a high degree of sanctity and to great love and union with God. And because many spiritual persons do not rightly apprehend this truth, they bear about with them a crushed and distrustful heart and spirit, which hinders them from advancing onward and fitting themselves for the higher graces, which one by one God had prepared for them. And they often lead a very wretched, useless, and pitiable life, because they will follow nothing but their own imaginations and embrace not the true and salutary doctrine which leads by the royal way to the high and solid virtues of the Christian life and to that peace which was bequeathed to us on earth by Christ Himself. Such persons, when they find themselves in any disquietude of mind, should seek the counsel of their spiritual father or of someone whom they think capable of giving them advice, and committing themselves to Him, set their minds entirely at rest. We will conclude in the next chapter what we have to say of the uneasiness arising from failings. Chapter 15. That the soul without loss of time should compose herself and so make progress. Take this for thy rule, whenever thou shalt fall into any fault, be it great or small, though thou mayest have committed the same 4,000 times a day, and that consciously and willfully. Disturb not thyself with bitter discontent. Disquiet not thyself. Lose not time in scrutinizing, but instantly acknowledge what thou hast done, and humbly considering thine own frailty, turn lovingly to thy God, and with thy mouth, or at least with thy mind, say to Him, Lord, I have done this of myself, and nothing else could be expected of me but these and other faults. Nor should I have stopped even here, but that thy goodness raised me up and forsook me not. I thank thee for that from which thou hast delivered me, and I grieve over that which I have done, because I have not responded to thy grace. Pardon me, and give me grace nevermore to offend thee, and grant that nothing may ever separate me from thee, whom alone I desire always to serve and obey. Having done this, do not lose time in anxiety, thinking and imagining what the Lord has not forgiven thee, but continue thy exercises in faith and peace, as if thou hadst not fallen into any fault. And this thou must do not once only, but 100 times if necessary, and at every moment, and with the same peace and confidence the last time as the first. For thus thou wilt greatly honor the goodness of God, whom thou art bound to think of as all gracious and infinite in mercy beyond thy power to conceive. So will nothing ever disturb thy perseverance, thy profit, and thy progress, nor wilt thou waste time fruitlessly and in vain. And thus mayest thou also turn this fault and failing to good account, rising from it with an intense act of acknowledgement of thine own misery, abasing thyself before God, and adding thereto an act of acknowledgement of His mercy, loving and exalting it exceedingly. And this very fall will cause thee to rise higher than before by the help which God will give thee if thou wilt use it aright. And if all anxious and unquiet spirits would attend to what has been here said, they would see how great is their blindness in thus losing time to their own most serious injury. And this warning should be carefully attended to, because it is one of the keys wherewith the soul may open to herself immense spiritual treasures and enrich herself speedily. We thus conclude The Spiritual Combat, a new translation from the Italian of Father Lorenzo Scopoli, a supplement and a treatise of Inward Peace. We hope that this has been beneficial and helpful to you, and that you will listen to it often. Thank you. This tape and others are available from your religious supply store or order direct from Patrick Henry, Route 2, Box 957, Safford, Arizona, 85546. That's Patrick Henry, Route 2, Box 957, Safford, S-A-F-F-O-R-D, Safford, Arizona, 85546. Thank you.